Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, well, Andrew, for the second year in a row, the forbidden door was opened, and we walked through it, and we survived to see the other side. What did you think of last night's show?
We did survive. It was long. It was fun. Yeah, it was really long, but it was fun.
My reaction exactly. It was really long, and it was a good. I mean, look, the show was fantastic. Like, it was a really good show, but I would have been really, really happy if it was an hour shorter.
Yes.
At some point, and I think the crowd in Toronto would have been happy if it was an hour shorter, because it seemed like they were getting a little burnt out there at the end.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, in retrospect, it was probably the, the easy call to go with Ospreay and Omega to, like, close out the night, but because it was, like, really exciting to think about Okada and Danielson in the ring together, but by that point in the night, I think people were more just being polite than actually, like, super into the match for the most part, just because it was, 5 hours into the show at that point.
Yeah, it was a long time. And I think, the one thing I thought that the Danielson-Okada match had going for it was the fact that there was no title involved. I really didn't know who was going to win, which I think added, some nice surprise element, especially to some of the near falls. But still, it was just, you could have cut some stuff out of here, and I would have been really happy if they did. Like, just looking at the card, and we'll kind of break it down here, and then we'll go to calls and emails. There's 14 matches if you include the pre-show.
Yeah, and they had to cut one, too.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And just looking at the main card, I would have said the International Championship match didn't have to be on the show if we were talking about this a week ago. I thought that match was pretty good, so I was fine with that one. To me, the IWGP World Heavyweight Title match, I mean, I guess it needs to be on the show. It wasn't a very good match with Sonata and Jungle Boy. The 10-man was fine. I think you could have saved time by taking the 6-man with Sting and Jericho out completely, because that match was the worst of the night, in my opinion. Yeah. Get rid of that. I mean, you just didn't need it. You didn't need probably the Women's World Championship match. Didn't be on the show. It didn't really need to be on the show either. I mean, Willow Nightingale has a title in New Japan, so I guess it makes sense that they want her there. But I don't know. It just, you could have saved some time by eliminating those two matches, and I still think it would have been fine. And honestly, and here's my other thing. If your world title match is MJF and Tanahashi, and no one on planet Earth thinks that Tanahashi is going to win, just don't do the match.
Because
it's one of these pay-per-views, like, they had it on there as the opener, which I know why they did it, because it wasn't going to main event the show, because it wasn't the main event. So the opener, I guess, is the second best spot on the show. That's what people will say. I will sometimes agree, sometimes not. Depends on the show. But, like, this show is about New Japan and AEW and its dream matches. Like, just don't have the match on the show, because no one thought he was going to, like, it just, no one thought MJF was going to lose. Like, I think it hurts that match overall when everyone knows the result before they even make their ring entrance.
Well, they didn't do a very good job either of explaining why Tanahashi should get the shot anyway. Like, I don't know what I just don't really follow New Japan. So I don't know. Like, for all I know, he could have won every single match the entire year, or he could have lost every single match the entire year. All I know from, like, AEW's, like, storytelling standpoint is that he got the shot last year at Forbidden Door. He lost. You would just naturally assume somebody else would get the shot this year, and they didn't. And it was the same result. So I don't know. Maybe they'll do it 3 years in a row.
Yeah. I just think, having seen this show 2 years in a row now, and the way that they put it together, you just don't need the world title matches on the show really at all. Like, it's not what it's about. Honestly, that match is better if it's not for the world title, because at least there's some sort of intrigue into who's going to win. Just like the IWGP world title heavyweight title match is, there's probably more suspense in the result if the title's not on the line. This pay-per-view is the one show a year that's not being sold on title matches. So I would be fine if they just didn't have him, honestly.
Yeah, I don't think it really would have hurt the show because, I mean, Sonata, you know, he's the top guy in New Japan, and he faced the, I don't know, the 20th, 25th biggest name in AEW, maybe?
Who's it? Well, he's a heel now, though, so maybe he'll get over. I don't see that working at all.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't think it's going to be a good feud, like, you know, him and Hook. Both guys could use, like, the reps and the time and probably some character development. I'm curious how it'll go, but I don't think it's a slam dunk idea.
The other thing we need to talk about, and then we'll get to calls and we'll get to emails, and I'm sure this topic will come up. But once again, my buddy CM Punk, the reaction was different, okay? Yeah. However, it was still the loudest reaction on the show.
Yep.
So
yep.
That's where, honestly, I don't think Punk cares. I think Punk, it's almost similar to the way Bret Hart presented himself in 1997, where he was a babyface in Canada and a heel everywhere else. You know, they're not going to draw literal country lines here, but I think Punk is going to be a babyface to the people that are not fans of the Elite, and he is going to be a heel to those who think the Flippity Bucks are the be-all, end-all in pro wrestling. So, like, that's where that line is going to be drawn, and I think Punk is not really going to act like a babyface or a heel. He's going to act like someone who doesn't like the Bucks and in the Elite, and he will be framed in the viewer's mind as a babyface or a heel, depending upon how they feel about those individuals.
Yeah, surprisingly, I thought that match was a blast. Like, I had no interest – well, very little interest in it. Like, I'm still curious to see, like, CM Punk's first singles match since he returned. But I know nothing about Kojima? Was that the wrestler? Yeah, I know absolutely nothing about him. And it's like, obviously, Punk is going to win. He's going to move forward in that tournament. But the way that he reacted, the way that the crowd reacted to him, and maybe – a top three moment of the night for me was just him busting out Hogan's leg drop for no reason. I got a good laugh out of that. So I love Punk's confidence and swagger when he's just being like a cocky heel like that.
And the funny thing is like, this is going to probably make just aggravate people even more. It's almost the exact, I would frame it very similarly to the way John Cena was for like 10 years from 2007 to like 2017, whether people are booing him or whether people are cheering him, he's still getting the loudest reaction. He's the biggest star. And I know that fans, that the people that really, really are hardcore Elite fans are not going to want to hear that. He's the biggest star in the company. You can hate him. That's okay. But he's still the biggest star in the company.
By far. I was so happy just to see this version of Punk, you know, as opposed to like what we got when he first debuted.
Oh yeah.
And the whole, shucks, like, I'm so happy to be here. You guys make me so happy. and this is just like, I don't give a damn what you think. You can like me, you could not like me, and I don't care, but I'm just going to like go out and do my thing. And man, like just like almost nobody has his aura. I know he's 44 and he's not in the greatest, you know, shape, health-wise, potentially. But man, like nobody can touch him, like from like a character standpoint.
And this is the best version of Punk. Like, there's no question. You're absolutely right. This is the best version of Punk. The best version of CM Punk is when he's pissed off about something.
Yes.
When CM Punk is happy, he's not nearly as compelling. he's one of these individuals who like always needs to. He's not happy unless he's miserable. Like, and there's a lot of, like, I know people in my personal life that are like that. They're complaining about everything.
Yeah.
They're not happy unless they're miserable. But with him, when he feels like he has an axe to grind, when he feels like he has a grievance, that's when he's at his best. He was like that for 5 years in WWE, if not for the entire time he was there, definitely from the pipe bomb promo until the end. So like, this is a much, much, much more compelling version of CM Punk. And I think, again, like, there will be people that will choose to view him as a babyface. There will be people who choose to view him as a heel. I think a lot of it depends on how you view the Elite. Now, the crowd in Chicago is very pro-punk. The crowd in Toronto is very pro-elite.
Yeah.
I think it will vary. I really do. Like, I don't think that either one is going to – we can say either one is going to become the norm. But I think it will vary depending on the location. And that's okay.
Yeah. I think so, too. And they got a few more Canada shows ahead of them for Collision for the next few weeks. So I imagine that he'll still get booed quite a bit. But once they get out of there, I'm very curious to see if it's like 90% of the time he gets booed or, you know, they half and half or if people like just start respecting him again and liking him more. I think that's certainly possible, too, just because he's, you know, one of the most entertaining people on the roster, if not the most entertaining.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting. Like, I was thinking back even last night to the promo that he cut on the first episode of Collision. He took the AEW mic flag off the microphone.
Yeah.
Right. Like, that was, if you're a fan of the Elite, that was a heel promo. There's
no doubt. Sure. Yeah.
Like,
for
that
sure.
Was, if you're just a hardcore fan of the Elite, that was very much a heel promo, right down to the fact where he insulted you. You know, not you, Andrew, but, like, he insulted the Elite fans by being like, yeah, not you personally, but, like, Andrew, I know you're watching. But I forget what the exact line was, but something to the effect of, like, I'm sorry that the only, like, whatever it was like, you're soft wrestlers you like or something.
Yeah, right? Something like, yeah.
So, I mean, that was, if you're an Elite fan, that's a heel promo directed at you. Like, that's exactly what that was. So, I can see why I my guess is that even some casual viewers will view him as a heel. Mm-hmm. I think he's coming across more and more like a heel. I think Tony even may want him framed as a heel. But I do think there's going to be certain crowds that still cheer him no matter what.
Yeah, I think so too. I think no matter what, he's still going to have at least like 25% of the crowd cheering for him because he's just like such a generational talent and he's a longtime favorite of a lot of people. And I think he did like a masterful job last night of just like being the heel, making Kojima look good, really selling his offense, being a cocky jerk when he was in control. I thought it was a blast and like one of the highlights of the night. And again, I just didn't really have any hopes for the match. I just thought it would be like a back and forth 10-minute affair, you know, forgettable, but man, I thought that was fun.
And the biggest news story of the night is they were in the same building.
Yeah.
And then there was no fight and nobody's life was threatened. Like, come, like, let's seriously. I actually saw that. That was, I read something about that earlier today. Like, you know, there was no big brawl with them all in the same building. Like, come on.
Yeah, it just happens every time.
Yeah, seriously. They're just going to see each other start brawling. There's not going to be because, like I said last week, there's going to be a match. I think it's happening at the end of the summer. I think everybody's on the same page, and I think there's going to be a match. But I just thought it funny that people were like, what's going to happen? They're going to be in the building for the same time. But everybody can relax. But it was mostly, you know, from what I saw, you know, fans of the Elite. You even saw reports out there last week, like top guys were upset that Punk was on Dynamite. They had they were told they wouldn't have to share the locker room with him, and then he's there. Oh my! I just feel so bad for your tears because you have to share the locker room with someone you don't like. Like, just if that's true, and that wasn't just, you know, floated by someone to enhance the storyline or whatever.
Yeah.
If that's actually true, and there were people in a pro wrestling locker room, you're been getting paid hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars.
Oh, millions for the bucks, I would assume.
Yeah,
Punk,
to be on TV every week, and you're going to cry to people that you know in the media that you had to share the locker room with someone you don't like. Like, grow up. Just grow up and welcome to reality. Like, I got such a chuckle out of that. Like, that's actually a real thing.
Well, the thing is, too, like, unlike, say, Major League Baseball, NBA, et cetera, they don't actually get dressed in the same room. Like, so, like, they're not even in the same locker room. The locker room is just a metaphor, I don't know, for the entire building, essentially. You know, they're in their own places. So if they can't, like, handle being 500 feet away from each other, like, I don't know, then they got some issues to work through.
How many people listening right now have to work with somebody they don't like?
I'd be surprised if anyone did not.
90% of us? Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's someone at your job that you don't like or you don't get along with or whatever, and you find a way to coexist, and nobody got stabbed or killed backstage. Like, just come on.
To be fair, I have not been punched by a coworker, but if you give me a couple $1 million, I will let one of them take a swing at me.
Well, let me ask you this. If you were punched by a coworker and then someone said, look, for this one time, you're going to be in the same building, but it's like you're in this giant building.
Yeah, yeah.
They're going to be in this room. You're going to be in a different room. It's about, you know, a quarter of a mile apart from each other because the building's so big.
Yeah.
And you're never going to actually have to see them. Are you okay with that, Andrew?
In my mind, like trying to make the situations like somewhat similar, I would have to be like, you know, giving a speech at a conference and like I'm taking shots at this coworker, so, and they're taking shots at me publicly. So I kind of deserve it at some level. And then I think
you were punched by a coworker, but you also barged into their hotel room before they punched.
Yeah, like if I got to work and like one of my coworkers just punched me in the face for no reason, well, that's a different story. But if I publicly took shots at them, then it's, I would like to think I could say, I deserved a little bit of that. I can handle it.
All right, let's get to phone calls and emails. DJ in Miami is the first caller this week. Hello.
Hi, guys.
How you doing?
Hello.
I'm doing good. The show was all right yesterday. Nothing crazy. I knew it wasn't going to be crazy. You know, I mean, there was a couple crazy spots, you know, but I'll get into that. But I want to bring up what he was just saying about Punk really fast before, you know, you guys end it. Now, I was just thinking about this. What he said, Punk was a heel. Going into that, I feel like there can't be two heels. And MJF is definitely not going to be a babyface. And going into Punk and MJF at the end of the day, you know what I'm saying? Like, Punk is, of course, the best, you know, heel. He sucks as a babyface. So at the end of the day, what do you guys really think? I mean, it's going to be heel against his heel, and then what's going to happen when Punk wins? Like, is MJF all of a sudden going to leave or be a babyface? Like, come on, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, so it's a really good question, Andrew. I think it's one of two things. I think either Tony may try to turn MJF babyface. That's one option, right?
Mm-hmm.
If people are really, really going against Punk. The other option is if that match happens in Chicago, Punk won't be the heel. He'll be the heel. He'll probably be the heel to everybody else who's not in Chicago. But he'd be the babyface in Chicago. So I think if they're going to do it, Andrew, like it all out, that's if you want Punk to, if it is a heel versus heel match, the place to do it is Chicago and All Out, because at least that crowd would be pro Punk.
Yeah, I could be wrong, but I just don't see this match happening soon, because I think they'll probably do, why am I blanking? Oh, Adam Cole. Adam Cole versus MJF at All Out or All In. Although I guess you're right, one of them is in Chicago, so they might want to be doing something major for that.
Yeah, and they've done stuff on TV too. Like Adam Cole could also be the Wembley match.
That's true, and they are doing them like a week apart. Yeah. So I don't know. I the thing is, like Punk, you know, his title reigns did not go great. Obviously, he got hurt right away both times. So I don't know if like Tony is just like itching to get the title back on him. He may want to like, you know, wait and see a while. But if this is like going to happen, then I would say, I don't know. I think he would just go like the Vince McMahon, John Cena route and just be like, hey, Punk's getting a reaction. You can either like him or don't like him. He's just him. But I don't think he would frame him as overly heelish. And the other thing too, to keep in mind is we don't know 100% sure if MJF has like re-signed with the company. So that could like switch things up too.
Yeah,
the roles they would play. So yeah, there's a lot going on there.
Also, too, like you also need to remember that I completely lost my train of thought, so I don't know what you need to remember. I was going to say something that was pretty insightful, though.
Yeah.
I'll think of it. I got sidetracked. I started tweeting the link out to the show. Yeah, go ahead.
Right on.
Okay, now I was just thinking about this while you're doing your thing. Now, I also think that Punk has to be heel because the Elite is babyface. The Elite's not going to be a heel, and Punk's not going to be a heel at the same time. You know what I'm saying? So at the end of the day, Punk's going to be a heel.
Yeah, he could be. And I do think he's been framed that way, Andrew, like we were saying earlier with the promo. Like, he's the opening promo, he has been framed more as a heel than a babyface. If you really don't want to like CM Punk.
Yeah, I mean, had he cut that promo not in Chicago, it would have been a completely different response to him. But it, you know, because he was in front of his hometown, they ate it up.
Yeah.
I guess my second thing is real quick, the Sting thing. Oh my God! Did you guys see that? His neck got bent wrong way, and the other thing, I was like, this guy is how old, and his neck is what? You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
I mean, I understand he wants to do one more match, but, I mean, we have to hold him off on this, you know? Like, that was crazy.
Yeah. I saw somebody wrote something earlier today. Like, it's time. Tony almost needs to save Sting from himself at this point. It was not good. It was scary. We have now crossed over into the territory of, like, you know what? I just don't really want to see him anymore, Andrew. I get nervous that he's going to get hurt every time he's in the ring.
He looked like he was stumbling around a little bit. There was one point, too, where it was, like, obvious that he should have been trying to, like, break up a cover. Or, like, that's a spot where people would be doing that, but he was just, like, grabbing onto the ropes and, like, walking back to his side of the ring.
Sixty-four
years old. I did not like the spot of Sammy Guevara, like, jumping on him like that. It's, you know, I think once you hit 48 or 50, like, you probably shouldn't have somebody, like, jumping on you like that. And maybe even that's too late. So I don't know. I'm totally cool if he wants to, like, wrap it up and do a couple more, like, tag team matches, or one final singles match where the other guy just is doing all the bumps for him. But yeah, I'm more nervous watching him these days than enjoying it.
Yeah, I just want him to do his final match or just, I don't think, do something. But, you know, just, you know what I'm saying? I just don't want him to hurt himself. He's in good shape, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, mm-hmm. I just don't want him to hurt himself. But, I mean, he could do so much, so, for his company. So, hopefully at the end of the day, we'll see what happens to him. I mean, I guess he seems okay with it, you know? So.
Yeah.
He basically said today that because people have been speculating he was going to call it a career, like All In or All Out, and he's like, nope, I don't know when, but it's not going to be then. So he's planning to go at least a while longer.
Yeah, I just hope we'll see at the end of the day. I think that there's going to be a couple things that he'll do and then he'll retire. So I just don't hope he doesn't do the Arn Anderson thing. So. You know, what do you mean, right? So, okay, my last thing is Adam Cole. I don't know. It's like at the end of the day, I'm just confused. Like, there's this triangle at the end of the day. It's just like MJF can't go babyface. Adam Cole is the biggest babyface right now, but Adam Cole needs to work on Adam Cole, and there's no other babyface coming up right now that I see that will take Adam's spot if he gets hurt or. Like this tag team thing, right? So think about it. If they're doing this tag team thing, and that's horrible for your, of course, your champion. Like that's so stupid. Of all things, your champion has to win another chat. That's horrible. That's horrible booking. You know what I'm saying? So it's like they're not even bringing a new baby face up while they're playing this game too. So at the end of the day, it's like, what are they doing? Like. Pick something. Is Adam Cole going to be the baby face, the top baby face, or are you going to bring somebody else while they're playing, you know, patty cake with these two guys for a couple weeks? You know what I'm saying? Win the belts.
Yeah, they really aren't. I mean, and I guess that's where are we looking at someone turning? Like, are we looking, Andrew, at an MJF turn that could lead to answering some of those questions? Like, they're not getting another babyface ready to fill Adam Cole's spot because they know it's going to be MJF in 3 months. Like, I don't know if that's in the plans, but something has to be in the plans because he's right. After Cole, let's say that MJF is not turning. After Cole, wrestle, has that match with MJF, there's really no one ready for that next spot, like the next challenge. And they've got time to do it, but there isn't anybody that seems like they're even on that path at this point, with the exception of maybe Punk.
Yeah, I think you could maybe do – I think if that happened, like say Cole gets injured or something, you could try to like heat up Hangman Page for a showdown with MJF. You could maybe do Omega. Maybe if they find like Will Ospreay full-time and turned him face. Otherwise, yeah, they're a ways off because like Sammy Guevara, if he turns face, he's not ready for that role. Darby Allin, we kind of just saw in that role. Jungle Boy turned – yeah, I'm struggling on who that would be. So yeah, they should
even know. Yeah.
Yeah, they got it. They got some work to do.
That's what I'm saying. So it's just like,
yeah.
What I'm saying, it's so weird that they're just relying on this dude who's already been hurt, concussion, all this stuff, and had a crazy match. But this is your top babyface, okay, buddy? You know what I'm saying? At least Cody stayed home for and he looked better. But I mean, you know what I'm saying? But MJF is nowhere near Cody's, looking like right now. You know what I'm saying? So think about it. I mean, that's not cool there to have nobody behind Adam Cole as coming up. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's horrible booking.
Doesn't seem like there's a lot of planning there. And I do feel like we've got to give Tony some of the benefit of the doubt because, again, like maybe there's something that he can trigger – in a moment's notice to fill that gap if he has to, or he knows that that's the next step or whatever the case may be. But yeah, right now it doesn't seem like anyone's on that path.
We'll see you next week.
All right.
Thanks.
Yeah. Thanks, DJ. Yeah. Thanks for the call. As always, we'll talk to you again, hopefully next week. Andrew, we can get to some emails here while we're waiting to see if anyone else wants to jump on. 515-605-9345, that's the phone number. If you're listening to this in the podcast feed and you want to give us a call on a Monday night, which is when we record this, Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern time, 515-605-9345, that's the phone number. Hit the number one when you're on hold. That lets us know you want to get on the air. I see a couple of callers there, but no one has their hand raised in a little caller queue. So if you do want to get on the line and talk AEW, hit the number one, and that will raise the hand for us and let us know that you want to get on the air. But while we are waiting for more potential callers here, let's go to emails. Taylor from Boston says, "Hey guys, I'm sitting here watching Forbidden Door." This was actually sent during the show last night. "I'm sitting here watching Forbidden Door. Great show so far. I'm now watching the 5-on-5 Elite versus BCC match. Has there ever been a more out-of-place guy than Wheeler Yuta?" Taylor says that this guy is awful. "Not counting the NWO at the end where everyone and their mother was wearing black and white, I can't think of a guy who was more out of place in a legit faction than this guy. Tony really missed the ball not putting Daniel Garcia with the BCC, in my opinion." Is Daniel Garcia a better fit for the BCC than Wheeler Yuta, Andrew?
Well, first I want to say maybe more out of place would be Paul Roma in the Four Horsemen.
I agree.
I actually had this exact same thought today. I was like, man, Garcia, they had a good thing going with him, but he finally seems to be like getting over with the crowd again, and it's because of that stupid dance.
I know.
Wrestling has the weirdest thing. So, like, honestly, that might work for him and help take him to the next level over the next, like, 6 years, not 6 months to a year or something. But, yeah, I think Garcia would have been a much better fit. I was very down on Wheeler Yuta until recently, and now I kind of see what they're going for. Like, the names that Brian Danielson keeps calling them, I don't think I can say on the show, but I think that's what they're going for. He's this little punk. He's there to annoy everyone, and people know he's not with – he shouldn't be there, and they're, like, leaning into that. And he's like this brat character. So I think if they do that, that could be kind of fun. Because, yeah, he was a terrible – I thought he was a terrible babyface, a terrible promo. But I think this is a role that might be working for him. So it's kind of growing on me a little bit. What do you think?
It's growing on me a little bit. I do think – to me, it's more like he's got to change his look. Like, I just think there's something about the look that doesn't connect with me. You know, like they've always said, you've got to – I've always heard, and I know it's been like a Bruce Pritchard saying, but other people have said it too. You can't look like a fan. Like you, when someone walks into a room, you got to have that look where it's like,
yeah,
man, I don't know what that guy does, but he's somebody.
Yeah,
he doesn't really have that yet. I mean, maybe he'll find it, you know. But right now, he looks like he could be sitting in the front row. You know what I mean? And that's where I think it disconnects with me a little bit at this point.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah, if I could still like go back in time, I would make that switch to put Garcia in instead of him. And it kind of, I mean, I know storylines change and everything, but the original genesis of the BCC was like Danielson and Moxley were like going to train the next generation of wrestlers. And all that happened was Cesaro joined the group and then Yuta joined the group. And, you know, there's not, you would assume like a couple more people who like fit that vibe would join.
Yeah. Oh, I'm seeing here that Carmelo Hayes is going to be on Raw tonight. That's interesting.
Oh, nice.
Carmelo Hayes he's from New England. I watched him quite a bit on the local indie scene back in the day. In fact, it just came up in my memories the other day. You know how, like, do you have an iPhone or are you an Android guy?
I'm an iPhone guy.
Oh, I know that. We text all the time. It comes over an iPhone. But yeah, so like, you know how every once in a while, like in your photos app, it'll be like your memories. It'll just start.
Oh,
they're not even connected to dates. It's just kind of like random collections.
I got random stuff from my cat yesterday. Yeah.
Yeah. I get that too. It'll be like, here's memories
furry
of
your friends. Yeah.
Yeah. Furry friends. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I had one that came across about a week ago of like my kids taking a picture with him. He wasn't Carmelo Hayes at that point. I forget what the hell was his name? Christian Casanova. That was his name.
Oh, on the okay.
And it was like at a show afterwards, I think he had the belt for the promotion and was doing like photos afterwards. My kids are probably like, you know, I don't know, 10 and 8 or something like that. And they wanted to take a picture. And there was the picture popping up. But I'm like, oh, look at that. That's kind of funny. And now he's going to make his... Like his Raw debut. I'm sorry. I have to finish Taylor's email here. Taylor says, Mike, I also agree with you that Punk and the Elite have agreed to a match 100%. I'd love to see the odds on who takes the pin in that match. Well, I think that's why FTR is there.
yeah, either one of them would happily take the pin.
I think Punk would too. Like if Punk I think he would take the pin and not have any issue with it.
I think he would want to show that, too. Like, that's what he's been saying. Like, hey, I'm willing to work with these guys. I think he would also be like, I'm willing to, like, do the job here.
Yeah, and that was the important thing. If you go all the way back to the the interview that got them sued, when he was on Colt Cabana's podcast, it never felt like Punk had an issue putting someone over.
No.
His issue was always... I'm putting over part-time guys. So, okay, I'm going to lose to The Undertaker at WrestleMania. He's going to go home. I'm going to be here on Monday. Then what?
Mm-hmm.
And there wouldn't be a plan. I'm going to put over Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam. He's going to go home. I'm going to be here on Monday. Then what? And it's like Vince didn't have a plan. And that seemed to be what he got frustrated with. I think he would take the pin if it was the right move in the match.
Yeah, I think so, too. I guess the only person he had a bit of a problem putting over was Ryback. But I think
who could blame him?
I think that was due to getting hurt by him, too, a couple times.
Yeah, oh, for sure. And I'll also say this. From what I gather from again, interviews and just kind of seeing how they carry themselves,
mm-hmm.
I think one of the Bucks would take the pin, too, if they felt like it was the right thing.
Oh, interesting. See, I think Omega would, but
I think Omega definitely would if it was the right call.
Yeah, I think he'd be fine with that. I see the Bucks as more like standoffish and not wanting to, but maybe they'd. I mean, it would make more sense for one of them too. That way, you could still do like a Punk Omega match would be, you know, which is another a big thing they could do.
Yeah. We will see. Oh, Taylor finishes up, said, Mike, I enjoyed your convo with Jay Stu on the 98.5 podcast. Highly recommend this pod for any wrestling fan. Yes, I was on James Stewart, who's a producer for the Felger and Mass show in Boston. It's a sports radio station, and they like pummel everyone in the ratings. He is a huge wrestler. The producer for the show is a huge huge wrestling fan, and it goes to a ton of shows. You see him in the front row a lot when they're in Boston. He has a podcast through the radio station about wrestling called Stick to Wrestling, which I was on last week, and we talked a ton about Punk and AEW, et cetera. So
that's awesome. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, I'm sure it's on. I don't know if it's on their station page. I imagine it would be. I think they're Odyssey, so I think it's on the Odyssey app. I think they're an Odyssey station. Okay. Still no one is the number one. There's like four phone calls here. No one's the number one. So
don't be shy.
Don't be shy. Yeah, we're not scary at all.
Or you can be shy. Just you know, work through it.
Overcome your fears. Zach in Texas. This was sent in very early this morning, so Zach must have been either up late or up early, depending upon if he sent this before or after he went to bed at 5 a.m.
Jeez.
And, well, wait a minute. It was 4 a.m., I think, if it's Texas time. Or Central time, I think, right? So probably
They are Central time, yeah.
So 4 a.m. his time.
What's going on, Zach?
Maybe he's an early riser. I'm not an early riser.
Oh, no. I hate getting up early. Yeah.
It's the worst.
Agreed.
It's the worst. But I do like – I am very much a night owl, so it could be that Zach just had not gone to bed yet.
Yeah.
We want an answer on this.
A lot of speculation. Yeah.
To his email. Let's get the controversial stuff out of the way. CM Punk was booed out of the building on Collision this week. Toronto upped the ante at Forbidden Door and booed him even further out of the building. There was a small contingent of Punk fans, but every time they tried to get a CM Punk chant going, it was overwhelmed and smothered out. That's why I said Chicago was an outlier. He got cheered because it was his hometown. Now he's going to get booed everywhere he goes. This isn't that much of a surprise, though, if you consider the fact that the mention of him was getting booed in the weeks leading up to his return. Credit to Punk for leaning into the boos. He's very good at being an unlikable prick in and out of the ring. Okay. Kind of feels like a personal shot there. I just hope they don't fight the crowd because that would be a mistake. Also, I want to push you back gently on something, Mike. I'll give you that Punk is the biggest star in the company, but it's still the Elite's name on the door. Pepsi Phil wouldn't have a company to return to three times if it were not for them. Can we put a little respect on their names, especially after this weekend? No. Well, again, Andrew, tell me if you disagree with me here.
Okay.
I know that they said they put on All In as a group.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody who worked that show said it was Cody's show. and the other guys were kind of just along for the ride. That's number one. Number two, Andrew, I firmly believe Tony Khan was going to start a wrestling company regardless of whether or not the Elite were going to be involved. I know he has said otherwise. I believe he said, like, if they weren't in, we weren't going to do this. I don't believe him. I don't. I think he wanted to do this. I think the money was there. His money. I mean, I think he had convinced his father to finance the company, essentially. I think he was going to do it regardless. And I think he used All In as a way to jumpstart things a little bit. But I don't know, but by saying it's their name on the door, like, I feel like that's disrespectful to Tony Khan in a sense. Like, look, at the end of the day, it's Tony's company. No one has an ownership. Tony Khan and the Khan family 100% owns the company. No one else owns anything, and there's a reason for that. So I don't know. Do you think I'm wrong? I think he would have started this company regardless.
Yeah, I mean,
it would have looked different, right?
But yeah, I think so. Yeah. I mean, I think eventually he would have. This might have sped things up, but especially if, like, Jericho and, like, Jim Ross and maybe, like, Punk would come around. Like, maybe it would start now or in a couple of years or something. So, I mean, I give them more respect, like, as wrestlers because, as we saw, and, like, what you're saying, they haven't – and from everything I've heard, they haven't, like, done a ton behind the scenes to, like, make people respect them as like, management and creative minds. Like, they were actively – bad at creative and they were removed and people
it's like everything else. They're EVPs in name only.
Yeah. I mean, they're hell of a wrestlers and, you know, one of the best tag teams of the past couple decades, but, from like a management overall branding building the company, you know, coming up with some sort of any sort of vision or what it's going, the show's going to look like. From everything I've heard, I don't think they were that influential with that.
I don't think so either. Yeah, I think, and again, like 100%, give them credit in the ring. Their matches are always one of the best matches on the show. Almost every single time they're on the show.
Yep.
So in the ring, from a tag team standpoint, I think FTR is probably the only team right now that can touch them from a match standpoint. And for a while, it was just, like, especially the very beginning when FTR wasn't there, it was just the Bucks.
Yeah.
Maybe the Lucha Brothers, but really, it was just the Bucks. So, but yeah, I don't feel like there's no indication that they've had a lot of influence backstage, whether it's in the marketing of the company, the creative direction of the company, or anything like that. You know, it seems like Cody had influence. I think Kenny Omega has had influence in certain areas, such as the video game, you know, being the main component of that. But yeah, you heard that the Bucks were helping out with creative, and that lasted a few months, and then they weren't anymore. And now they still have these titles, but all indications are they're not really that influential backstage at all, as far as being management or having ownership, some sort of ownership stake or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, it seems they're more interested in, one, not working a ton, which is good for them, you know, because they were complaining about, you know, potentially traveling to, you know, their travel schedule, which is, I don't know, 52 dates a year, which is, you know, pretty amazing for a wrestler. And, you know, coming up with their YouTube content, which it's not like a money maker for the company or anything. Like they're spending their free creative time making goofy crap that 200,000 people watch and doesn't do a lot for the AEW product.
Yeah, I would agree. This is Zach again. Speaking of this weekend, Forbidden Door was another home run. This continues to be a winning concept, both financially and in the ring. Once again, it's show of the year thus far, and it's not particularly close. Omega and Ospreay put on an all-time classic. The Callis interference notwithstanding, the match was absolutely spectacular. I don't know how Kenny Omega's not paralyzed after that Tiger Driver 91. Yeah, oh.
Yeah, that was brutal.
I can't wait to see how they try and top this if they run it back at Wembley. Danielson and Okada was also an excellent match. Tony Khan licensing the final countdown was an adrenaline burst to the crowd. Exhausted from 4 hours of great pro wrestling. It needed to get them back into the match. If anything, this match suffered from having to follow Omega and Ospreay. Because I have no complaints about the in-ring, especially with considering Brian wrestled with one arm for most of the match. That's why I can overlook the worked convulsions, because it was a way to alert the ref and doctor of what happened. I didn't expect Brian to win, much less tap out Okada, so that was a shock. The rest of the show delivered in various ways. The 10-man tag was crazy physical to the point Excalibur almost dropped an F-bomb. The four-way was a blast. Punk and Kojima was very good, especially with Punk leaning into being a heel. Jack Perry and Sonata was good, but it was ultimately a backdrop for the transformation of Jungle Boy into Hollywood Jack Perry. Taz's reaction to the attack on Hook was great. MJF and Tanahashi was what it needed to be. The trios match with Sting was fine. I'm never going to badmouth the Sting match because it's just getting to see him in the ring at this point is a privilege. It's almost like Zach knew we weren't going to like that one. Kudos to Willow for keeping the crowd engaged in her match with Tony. Overall, good luck to Money in the Bank trying to follow the show next weekend. He has got a quick thing on Collision as well. See, Zach, I'm gonna nitpick with the last line there. Like, what does that have to do with anything? Like, what does Money in the Bank have anything to do with this show? Like, people I think need to disconnect these two things in their mind. Like, they're not on the same night. These companies are going to coexist. You know, we can say that they're in a wrestling war. They're not. This is not a war. They're not head to head. You know, they're barely fighting against each other for advertising dollars. And if they are fighting against each other for advertising dollars, I hate to break it to you, but AEW is losing WWE has had a head start and they've got bigger partners and yeah, they draw better ratings most weeks. So like, I don't know, Andrew, am I nitpicking there? Like, can we stop? Go try to top this one, Money in the Bank. Like, it has nothing. One has nothing to do with the other. It could be a really great show, and Money in the Bank could be a really great show within its own universe as well. And it doesn't diminish. Like, if Money in the Bank is a great show, it doesn't diminish anything that AEW just did. Like, Forbidden Door was great.
Yeah, it was a great, definitely a great show. It was so much better than the previous pay-per-view. And, yeah, just like Ospreay, Omega, probably a top five favorite AEW match for me so far. Yeah, that was excellent. Yeah, I mean, I would like, for me, AEW, I'm sure what this event would destroy Money in the Bank. I'm not going to watch Money in the Bank. I just don't have any interest. But yeah, I mean, it's not like the days of like Nitro and Raw when they were running relative same ratings, and you know, you were essentially competing like, hey, I just dropped $30 on this pay-per-view, I'm gonna go drop $30 on that pay-per-view, but maybe I shouldn't because I'm not into that one. So it had more of like a one-on-one effect on each other. Now I see what he's saying, but yeah, I don't think nobody like Triple H is like worried about it or anything.
No, like, I don't know. I think there was in the 90s when you were head to head on Mondays,
yeah,
people were making a choice over which show to watch. That doesn't exist now. People can watch both shows if they want to. It's really not a competition. Like, they're not really competing with each other. They're two companies that put out the same product. Okay.
Yeah. Is it weird if I say, I hope Logan Paul wins Money in the Bank?
I don't think that's weird. Why? Just to like watch the car crash happen? Is it like
no?
I
like him. I think he's way more.
I know. Entertaining
than almost anyone on that brand. Brief WWE talks. It drives me bonkers that they're once again doing what they're doing with LA Knight. He loses like every single match. It's like, come on. And then he'll probably win Money in the Bank because they do that all the time. Like, oh, let's have the winner lose a bunch of times to confuse people, you know, to make people think they won't win. But instead, you just make them look like a wuss because they always lose, and then they win, and it's like, well, who cares? They suck. So
I'm
do that.
Well, especially with, apparently, if I'm reading things correctly, Vince is making more and more changes to shows. So, sure, we're going to see more of that. Unfortunately. Zach has one more note about Collision. Nigel is great on commentary, but it's clearly going to take Kevin Kelly a while to familiarize himself with the AEW roster and their moveset. The difference in his commentary between Saturday and Sunday was night and day. He's obviously more comfortable with the New Japan product, and it showed. On Collision, he's doing the Michael Cole generic match call, and it really stands out when you have someone like Excalibur on Wednesdays. I still prefer Kevin Kelly doing the generic match call than Excalibur yelling at me on Wednesday, personally speaking. I would love if you found something in the middle, but I enjoy Kevin Kelly's commentary. I think he's been good so far. And I think, I think Zach has a point that he does need to get a little more familiar with the product, but when he does, I think he's going to get even better, and he's still not going to scream at me.
Yeah, I tend to kind of tune a wrestler's, the announcers out unless they're doing something really obnoxious or really good, like really emotional. But I feel like 80% of the time I'm just like not paying full attention to what they're saying, but I'll try to keep closer attention to what Kelly is saying, if anything stands out. But so far, I think he's good, and he's a good difference from Excalibur, like you're saying, how he's just like constantly shouting. And I like Excalibur overall, but like you do not need 5 hours a week of that. So I think the Collision for me has been a hit so far from an announcing standpoint.
Next is Jose from Golden Valley, who I think this is a joke. I don't think he's really getting upset with us, but he says, I will not tolerate Mike and a university pseudo-journalist clowning WWA Hall of Famer Nathan Jones and his legendary world title legacy. Unlike Big Rob, Nathan Jones actually performed at a WrestleMania. I mean, he's got
to. I mean, they didn't even let him in the match. They scratched him from the match that day. Rob Terry, he would have main evented if he was there.
Oh, he's a Vince guy for sure.
Yeah.
He continues here. He says he's thinking of some jungle bass songs with Jack Perry's new heel character. Jungle Love by the Steve Miller Band has that UWF heel groove to it. I don't know that. I'd have to look up that song. I'm sure I've heard it before, but
I only know a couple, like Take the Money and Run and the Magician song they have, Abracadabra.
Yeah. Back to Jose here. Kevin Sullivan at the height of people thinking he was intimate with goats before sacrificing them and drinking their blood came out of Nobody's Home by Deep Purple. The Undertaker and Triple H as top people. You need to be coming out with some metal riff from 1982 to be a heel. No. Shad Khan being swayed by his dorky son into signing a fat check to get the final countdown was a rare good idea from the kid. If the amount was equal to a talented contract, tell the Elite to kick rocks and take that $2 to $5 million saved and add 20 more uses for final countdown.
Wow.
Whew. Wow. Okay, he continues here, too. I love these CM Punk crowd reactions. It's exactly what I was hoping it would be. Stir them up. Honestly, a reaction like that alone can make a show worth watching. I drink the Elite fanboys' tears for constantly crying about Punk. Sorry, he isn't insecure and feeling the need to be the good guy or spin narratives like some South Cali clowns.
Ooh.
A true businessman. That's about the dollars and cents and not looking to the Observer Star ratings or newsletter awards for validations. Lastly, Jose says, I've been seeing a lot of discourse about WrestleMania 18 lately. What do you guys remember of the show itself and if politics or egos played a role in the show being underwhelming? Which one was 18?
Which one?
Was it Toronto?
Yeah, I thought that was Hogan Rock. Was that not? Yeah, that was 18.
Yeah, it was. I looked it up here. That was 18.
That was underwhelming?
So,
what?
I don't know.
Well, main event was.
The main event.
You
don't remember that show. I mean,
I'm gonna, hold on.
I do remember.
Yeah, I'm going to pull that up.
I don't remember it being underwhelming. I remember there being politics at play with the Rock Hogan match, and I think the, just the NWO in general, because I think Kevin Nash. Like Nash, I think Scott Hall was supposed to beat Austin, and then they were going to beat down Austin and leave him laying, and then Hogan was supposed to beat the Rock, and they were going to beat Rock laying, and that was how WrestleMania was going to close. It was going to be the NWO standing over the Rock. And then the idea was Austin and Rock were going to team up potentially with someone else to then take on the NWO. Like, that was the idea. And then day of the show, Austin was beating Hall, Rock was beating Hogan, and Hogan was being a babyface.
It was idiotic. It still pisses me off to this day because I was such a big NWO fan at the time, and, yeah, that made me mad.
I mean, think of that, what that could have been, right? The NWO leaves Steve Austin laying. They leave the Rock laying, and WrestleMania ends with them standing over the two biggest stars in the company. And then Rock and Austin have to team up and presumably find a third guy to go after the NWO. It would have been great. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. But they just, like, yeah, they killed that just like they killed WCW the year before. I'm trying to look for the card here, but results. Yeah, it looks like a bunch of really short. Undertaker, Ric Flair, that was fun. So in my head, I mean, like, Rock Hollywood Hogan is such an iconic match. It's one of my favorite WWE matches ever, so I'm maybe a little biased, but yeah, it looks like the rest of the card wasn't super strong.
Yeah, Rock, Undertaker, Flair. I don't remember that being particularly great. I mean, Maven won the Hardcore Championship, so that's...
Kurt Angle, Kane. Kurt probably could have had a better opponent. Yeah,
probably.
Main event was not so hot.
No, it was not. But, I mean, it did have some big, memorable moments, that's for sure, and matches. Chad in Nebraska, hope you guys had a great week. First, I know you guys love Chris Jericho, but if you can, listen to his interview with Don Callis. It's pretty funny with Callis staying in character the whole time. With the pay-per-view, my God, it was a great show with the obvious of Ospreay and Omega having an all-time great match, even with the ref looking like an idiot for ejecting Don Callis and letting him come back in 10 minutes later with nothing really happening to him. Also, that Tiger Driver spot, oh my God, with Omega just landing on his head and neck. Also, that Sting spot with Sammy and him not connecting on that cutter when he had Jericho in the Scorpion Deathlock looked kind of vicious. Meltzer said Danielson worked with a good portion of the match against Okada with a broken arm. How good is Danielson and Okada that they just made that match up on the fly after he broke his arm? I do think the biggest news is that everyone was wondering how Mike's favorite group of wrestlers, the Elite and CM Punk, were going to be in the same building all night. And guess what? Nothing happened. Imagine that. Impact, quickly, Chad says. Nothing too crazy to say this week, except I did love before Dirty Dango. I did laugh before Dirty Dango's match. He paused like he was going to do a long promo, and then all he said was, man, I hate pro wrestling. I have no idea why I laughed. I also have always thought that Santino's Cobra finishing move was stupid, And yeah, it's still stupid in 2023. Chad says.
Agreed.
Chad says he really likes Alex Shelley as the champion, but I hope he drops the whole yep thing. Lastly, I like this week's overall. I liked this week's overall as it's building the Slammiversary, which I personally have always felt was the bigger of the two big Impact pay-per-views. With Aldis and Shelley, DeMore and PCO versus Bully and Macklin, and it looks like Eddie versus Kazarian all looking like they'll be at the pay-per-view. P.S. Darby and Danhausen need to pull. Barry and Danhausen need to pull a Jimmy Jacobs and be written off TV, which is different than being fired. So.
Oh, for some reason, I was thinking Jimmy Havoc at first. I got my Jimmys mixed up.
Yes. Yes. Wait a minute. What is this?
Oh, boy. I'm nervous.
Uh-oh. Andrew.
Yeah.
I think we have a controversy on our hands here.
Oh, man. What is it?
So, Jose from Golden Valley, his email came in twice.
Mm-hmm.
One from his regular email address.
Uh-huh.
And one from the same email address as Alex in Minneapolis.
What?
So, Jose and Alex might be the same person.
Oh, my God. Really?
This is interesting. So, I thought this threw me when I was reading Jose's email. I'm like, really? I go, I'm seeing the email, the name associated with the email at the top, and I'm going, that's odd. I'm like, I don't remember that. I thought that was a different name. And that came in at 8 p.m. And then at 8:45 p.m., the same email came in from a different email address that's also, so Jose's email came in twice. And then we have a separate email here from Alex that came in at 8:48 p.m., sent from the same email address that sent us Jose's email at 8 o'clock p.m.
So which one isn't real, Alex or Jose?
I don't know.
Interesting. This is the biggest shock of our show's history.
I don't know. But now I'm very interested. I'm very interested.
I am very interested.
Did Alex and Jose ever snipe at each other in emails? Because that would be very interesting if there's one person playing us by creating two different characters and having them go after each other.
That's a good question. I know there's been some sniping back and forth, but I don't remember if it was those two. Interesting that. Yeah.
Let me see if the email addresses are the same. Yeah, they okay. are. I don't think, unless maybe Gmail's just making a mistake and like grabbed the tagging information wrong or something and is giving. I don't know. This has me intrigued.
Yeah, I'm intrigued. This might need an investigation.
Okay, but here's the other thing: the $5 challenge from Jose's two emails are exactly the same, And the attachment with the answers are also the same.
From the one from Alex and the one from Jose?
Well, Jose's email, word for word, came in twice. One from each email address.
What then, though?
We have a controversy here.
This is the biggest controversy since I got Booker T's theme song wrong.
Yes, this is
theme lyrics, yeah.
It's a full blown controversy.
This is beyond that. This is, wow. It's going to shake the show to its core.
It is. We are going to need answers next week on this. For sure.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
For sure.
You have to wonder what is going through his mind.
You do.
You really do.
You really do. Well, I'm now going to read Alex from Minneapolis' email, or is this Jose from Golden Valley? Or is it someone whose name isn't Jose nor Alex, and this is very interesting.
I don't know what to believe anymore. Is Chad really from Nebraska? Maybe they're all the same person.
Maybe. Every email we get comes from one person living out multiple personalities.
Yeah.
Okay. Alex from Minneapolis, or so he says, or so he claims to be, says, Toni Storm walking over Tony Khan in the media scrum was great. I know people complained her acting like a brat, no one wanting to be there, but it shows, but it all shows what a pushover with his own talent Tony Khan is. Even Jericho said on his podcast, quote, Tony's the booker, but I pretty much book my own stuff, end quote. Working or not, can you imagine them doing this to Vince or Hunter? I could buy maybe Rhea Ripley being audacious enough to put her feet on the table in front of Paula. during a press conference. I don't know if that was a typo or just a shock. Folks are buying the Wembley numbers when the source everyone is quoting for is Tony Khan himself, because let's believe a carny promoter, because they never lie. The same. Oh, I don't think those numbers are coming from Tony. I mean, I think there's independent ticketing companies on
there. Yeah, it sounded like Meltzer was reporting that news before, but I guess I don't know where he's getting them from, but...
The same con man who said he personally wanted to see Kojima versus Punk when it was obvious Punk versus Kenta had the most buzz and was the most dreamed about match and the most talked about. Also, if AEW claims Wembley is sold out and there's tarped off areas and empty seats, I hope we get Meltzer overanalyzing the attendance for 20 years like he has with the WrestleMania 3 attendance. Jungle Boy was but a bit ruined with all these fanboys begging and pleading for it to happen on the heel turn. On the one hand, being a silent badass is good for him because he can't talk to save his life. On the other, nothing about Jungle Boy will ever scream badass to me. The fact that they think a dude who couldn't cut promos as a good guy is somehow going to be able to cut promos as a bad guy is just laughable. I mean, yeah, we kind of talked about the heel turn earlier, Andrew, but I don't know. You seem more optimistic.
I think it's easier to cut a heel promo. So I am more. I think it's just easier to get people to hate you in wrestling than like you. So I think I have some. I don't have a ton of hope for that this will go great, but I think there's a possibility it will.
Cautiously optimistic.
I'm cautiously optimistic. Yeah.
There we go. Okay. Let's go to some different parts of the show. I almost gave it away. I almost said it without cueing the music, which would have been very, very bad. It's not what we do here.
No.
But it is time for a different part of the show. What time is it, Andrew? It is time for...
$5 challenge.
Oh, it's the laugh that gets me every time. Okay, we've got quite a few. Zach in Texas, he's up first. New theme, he says. I'm going to give you the technical descriptive name of a finisher, and you have to give me the common name. Good luck.
Oh, interesting.
This is interesting. Very interesting. Let's see. Number one, a three-quarter face lock jawbreaker.
Is that a stunner?
Sounds like a stunner to me, right? Three-quarter, I mean, the jawbreaker part, so.
Yeah.
Stunner. I think we're on the right track here. Three-quarter face lock bulldog. Sounds like a diamond cutter.
I was going to say a diamond cutter, yeah. Or the ace crusher, whatever that was called. Yeah.
Or an RKO.
Yeah.
Let's see, number three. A double underhook kneeling face buster.
Gotta
be a pedigree.
Yeah, that's got to be a pedigree, right? Yeah.
Got to be a pedigree. Got to be a pedigree. Pedigree. Number four, Fireman's Carry Spinning Face Buster.
F5?
That does sound like an – I couldn't think of it, but that does sound like an F5. And number five, an inverted belly-to-back mat slam. Inverted belly-to-back mat slam.
Inverted belly. So their belly is on their back. Like a German suplex, but –
inverted belly to back mat. Hold on. So like a belly to back suplex would be grabbing a guy by the waist from behind and suplexing him over your head. Right.
Yeah.
So inverted belly to back would be what? You're his back's up against your opponent's back's up against your stomach, but inverted would imply that the person's upside down, maybe. Yeah. But how, so you're lifting someone up, and they're upside down, with your stomach against their back. So inverted belly to back mat slam. I don't,
inverted belly to back.
So you just fall forward?
Wait. So an inverted atomic drop is, yeah, that's from behind, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I'm thinking like this, right? Like you do the – someone used to do this. I don't remember who it was, but they would pick a guy up like they were going for a powerbomb.
Uh-huh.
But instead of putting the guy up on the shoulder, he would kind of stop and leave the guy in front, and then he would just fall forward, and the guy would land face first on the mat.
Hmm.
I still, was that Ahmed Johnson? Was that the Pearl River Plunge?
The Pearl River Plunge, yeah. That was like a double-armed. I thought that was like a double-armed.
Oh, that was more like a sit-down
powerbomb,
I think.
Yeah.
What was that? Yeah, I don't know.
I would guess like a German suplex, but maybe I'm getting my.
Well, it's got to be a finisher though. Like who's?
Oh.
Whose finisher would be described as an inverted belly to back mat slam? I don't even know.
Inverted belly to back. Like the angle slam? No, that's more. That's on their shoulders.
What about like a Canadian destroyer? Is that what you would call that? Maybe
inverted belly to back. Yeah, this is I'm stumped.
Inverted belly to back mat slam. I don't even know. I'm trying to think of finishers. I mean, they've all been WWE finishers so far that we've had. Stunner. Well, I mean, Diamond Cutter would be. He may think an RKO, but Stunner, RKO, Diamond Cutter, Pedigree, F5.
Oh yeah, inverted belly.
What about? The only other thing I can think of where the guy's kind of upside down and belly to back like that is like a Styles Clash, kind of.
Oh. And upside down?
He has the guy upside down, so maybe that's inverted, and he steps over.
Oh.
He's belly to back, and then he falls forward and lands the guy, you know, face first on the mat.
Okay, I like that.
You like Styles Clash?
Yeah.
Right. Styles Clash. All right, let's see. Number one. Three-quarter face lock jawbreaker, Stone Cold Stunner. We are correct on that one, Andrew. Number two, three-quarter face lock bulldog. Two acceptable answers, Andrew. Jack says to this. The diamond cutter or the RKO. We had the diamond cutter, so we're correct there.
But is the ace crusher not a acceptable one?
I guess not. I'd have to go back and – I don't remember the ace crusher. I'd have to go back.
I think that was the – I think that's the original cutter, and then DDP took it from him and made it his own, and then, like, Gordon, I think. Yeah, that's how.
All right. Number three, double underhook kneeling facebuster. We had Pedigree. We are correct.
Yes.
Andrew, you came up with this one. The fireman's carry spinning facebuster is the F5.
Yes.
Inverted belly-to-back mat slam. We had Styles Clash. Andrew, we went 5 for 5.
No way.
We went 5 for 5.
Well done. I would not have. You pulled it through on that Styles Clash one. I would not have got that.
I wasn't even sure if that was it. I just found, I mean, he is inverted. He's upside down,
yeah.
So that wouldn't make sense. But I like that. That's a good theme from Zach. I like
that
a lot.
Good job.
Actually. That's a different one. I wouldn't. I like when Zach comes up with themes like that because, like, I would have never thought of to do that on my own. To be like, yeah, I'm going to give you the act, like, descriptive moveset. And, like, that's cool. It's a cool theme. I like it.
Yeah.
Let's see. Chad in Nebraska gave us a challenge.
Yes.
This week's $5 challenge is dedicated to the barbed wire massacre, which Impact Plus had all 5 matches on the main page this week. Can you guys name the 5 winners of barbed wire massacre matches?
Oh, man.
I know Alex will hate this. Maybe he means me for video. Okay. Alex, who's also
or
Jose.
Jose.
Yeah. I know Alex/Jose will hate this, but I will even give you guys the years that the matches were wrestled. And one of them was a tag team match. So he's going to give us the date of 5 barbed wire massacre matches, and we have to give him the winners.
Okay. I think I can maybe get one.
Let's see here. Turning Point 2005.
I think that was Sabu versus Abyss. And I would guess Abyss won.
I would guess Abyss won, too. I was going to get, I remember one of these, and I think it's this one. Against All Odds 2008. Everything else is more recent, 18, 21, and 22. So if that was Sabu and Abyss was 05, 08 had to have been the one I'm thinking of, which was Abyss and Judas Messiah.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
I remember that one. And that one, I think Abyss won as well.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot about that feud.
All right. So maybe that's a little trick that he's getting Abyss in there twice.
Yeah.
Impact. This is on there was one that happened in 2018 on an episode of Impact Television.
Oh, we must have watched it then.
Is this the, he said one of them was a tag team match. Was this LAX and OVE where the skewers got jabbed into the guy's head? Would have been that time period.
Yeah. I was definitely leaning towards OVE being involved in one of these, or Sami Callihan. So I'm cool with that. It's not like super standing out if that was what the gimmick was.
I just remember they had that big, I don't know if it was a barbed wire massacre match or just a regular hardcore match.
Yeah.
But that one where it finished on a ladder and somebody from OVE had like the
yeah.
barbecue skewer stuck in their head, and it completely grossed me out.
Yeah, I'm not overly squeamish, but I remember that one getting me.
So we're talking the new version of LAX, the AEW version of LAX, obviously.
Yes.
Whatever happened to that? Somebody hurt? Is that why they're not on TV anymore?
Santana's hurt, and according to Conan, Santana and Ortiz don't get along anymore. So.
Oh, well, that'll do it.
But yeah, Santana apparently is going to come back soon. I think he's almost ready.
Number four, Hard to Kill 2021. I have no idea.
Yeah, it would be a guess, like Callihan versus Eddie Edwards or something. That's a guess. Yeah, total guess.
They were feuding around that time, so that wouldn't make sense.
And they both are like fully clothed, like they wear shirts, so I feel like it's more likely to get tossed into barbed wire when you do that.
True.
What year?
Victory Road 2022. So last year. I have no recollection of this at all.
I would guess like, Violent by Design versus... Well, no, I guess it's one-on-one, right?
It must be, yeah. Well, not that it must be, but it probably is if we have LAX and OVE correct.
Yeah, so... Well, I'm blanking on who the old leader of Violent by Design was. Who was it before Cody Deaner? Eric Young. But I don't know if he's the type that would do a barbed wire match.
Yeah, I have no idea.
I feel like it could almost be like a women's match because they tend to.
That's true.
More hardcore. Yeah. That would be a total guess.
I have no idea. I have no idea.
Masa Slamovich versus Rosemary.
I mean, Rosemary would be the one, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Number one, Turning Point 2005. We had Abyss as the winner. Andrew, you had the match right, but not the winner right. Sabu beat Abyss.
Really? Do we get a half a point? I'd love a half. Or what would we get?
Yes, I'm awarding half. It's official.
Yes.
Number two, Against All Odds, 2008. We had Abyss over Judas Messiah. That is correct.
That's a full point.
Impact TV, 2018. We had LAX over. I just wrote down LAX and OVE. I didn't write down who won. He was looking for winners. I think LAX won the match, though.
Oh, I would assume so.
Because with the skewers in the head. So LAX over OVE. Let's see. Number three. LAX beat OVE. So that is another correct one.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I did good on that.
Hard to Kill 2021. You had Sammy versus Eddie. Who would you have there as a winner?
Oh, Eddie.
Eddie over Sammy. That is also correct, Andrew.
Is it really? Oh, wow.
And
I'm happy with that
2022,
one.
Do you have Mafia Slamovich or Rosemary as the winner?
I'm pretty sure this match never happened, so yes. I'm going to go Rosemary.
Rosemary. Incorrect. The correct answer, Steve Maclin beat Moose and Sammy Callahan in a three-way.
Okay. I was going to guess Callahan again, but what can you do?
3.5, Andrew.
Yeah. Not bad. I'll take that.
Official one is 3.5. Okay.
I'm happy with that.
Now we get in to the messy part here. This is from Jose in Golden Valley.
Or Alex in Minneapolis. Who's to say anymore?
I don't know. No disrespect, Andrew, but this is all for Mike. Really.
Wow. Well, I'm a little disrespected, but that's fine.
Only because in a cocky and arrogant way, he boasted about knowing KM trivia. I did say that last week, right?
Did you?
Okay. I was joking around about it. I was like, I know all KM. I think I should say something.
I will respectfully stand back then. I'll let you handle it.
Okay. Let's see if the Dave Meltzer of New England hockey is legit instead of all talk and no substance. Also, my first two ever $5 challenges were exclusively for Andrew, so this is fair game. Feel free to cheer him on, but no helping.
I will abide.
Okay. I don't like where this is going here, but let's see. Number one, KM used what artist track on the indies? Oh, God. No clue. So let's say he used, what would be a funny song for KM to use? He used YMCA. By the Village People.
Yeah, I love
Number two, KM played an arm wrestler on what CBS sitcom? Arm wrestler on a CBS sitcom. Andrew, you're not allowed to help me, right?
No, I'm not. Yeah.
Okay, I think he played only because, so I know a morning radio show that I would listen to, and it will still do. Always used to make fun of this show, and I know it was on CBS. So I'm going to say Man with a Plan, the one that starred Joey from Friends there, not LeBlanc.
Oh, I don't even remember that one.
This is like 4 or 5 years ago. Yeah, it lasted, I think, half a season. Number three, KM lost a tryout match to Mercury and Nitro in a 2005 episode of Velocity. What independent name was his tag team partner?
You got this.
KM is from the tri-state area, so it had to have been someone, you know, from the Northeast.
Yeah. Okay.
2005? I'm going to say Rob Terry. I think that's a callback.
T-Money.
Number four, KM won the PWS World Heavyweight title. What notable name did he defeat to win this title?
Oh, I know you got this one.
What is PWS? Pro Wrestling Syndicate?
Sounds about right. Oh, I guess I can't help, but...
Oh, yeah, okay, true. Yeah, that's right. We don't want to cheat here. Okay. I'm going to say notable name, huh? Notable name. Sean Waltman. Wrestles indies. And number five, KM played a security guard for what classic WWE storyline angle? Vince McMahon blowing up in his limo.
Oh, that's a good guess. Good guess.
All right. Number one, KM used what artist track on the indies? My guess was YMCA by the Village People. I was wrong. Slade by Overseer. Is what
I
was close.
Yeah, I think that's pretty close, yeah.
Half a point? No? No, probably not. Okay. Number two, KM played an arm wrestler on what CBS sitcom? I had Man with a Plan. The correct answer was Kevin Can Wait. I think that was the Kevin James show.
Oh, yeah.
Number three, KM lost a tryout match with Mercury and Nitro on a 2005 episode of Velocity. What independent name is his taxi partner? I had Rob Terry. The correct answer was not Rob Terry. It was Nick Burke.
Nick Burke? Huh.
We all know who that is.
Yeah.
Number four, KM won the PWS World Heavyweight title. What notable name did he defeat? I had Sean Waltman. The correct answer was Butterbean.
Oh, wow.
How about that one?
That's a fun one.
It is. And then number five, put a security guard on what classic WWE storyline angle? I had Vince McMahon blowing himself up in his limo. Correct answer was Eric Bischoff firing Chris Jericho on Raw in 2005.
Huh.
That's a big old zero. We do have one more, Andrew, but before we get to that, we did have a caller jump on the line. So let's
Rad.
Let's go back to calls for a second, then we'll go back to finishing up the $5 challenges. 531 is next. 531, what is on your mind?
Well, hello, my friends. This is Chad from Nebraska.
No way.
Yep. And all I want to say is Darby and Danhausen need to be fired. So I'm just joking, but I had to call in and just say Butterbean versus Crimson is a match that I need to watch. It's a 5-star classic.
Oh, yeah. How could it not be? I'm sure Butterbean was very athletic and moved quite a bit in that match.
Oh, he moved like probably one of the Young Bucks, I'm sure.
I just want to
call in and say I appreciate you guys, even though Alex or Jose will say I'm sucking up, but just joking. I just need to call in and say hi. I finally had a chance. So appreciate you guys.
Yeah, that's great. It's good to put a voice with the email. And
hopefully no ghosts lately, so.
Yes.
Actually, no, nothing lately. So that means tonight my 4-year-old's going to run into the room crying because she heard something. But
sorry.
Well, report back if it unfortunately happens.
Oh, as always, we will.
Okay.
But as always, need to call in to say, and everybody, I know I'm the Impact apologist, but it's been awesome lately. So thank you, you guys, and you have
it
a good night.
Awesome. Thanks,
yeah.
Chad.
Thanks,
good
Chad.
To hear from you. Yeah, no, that was awesome. Impact has been good lately. I have actually enjoyed it as well. They're doing some good stuff.
My boy's a champ, so no complaints from me.
Okay, back to one more $5 challenge, Andrew, to wrap up the show. Alex in Minneapolis, or maybe it's Jose, we don't know. I'm waiting for an explanation. We'll find out next week. WWE, he says, has almost 100 million YouTube subscribers. Can you name the top 5 most viewed videos on their channel? No. I almost feel like that's impossible, Andrew. Could you?
Brock Lesnar Returns 2012.
Okay. All right. Let's come up with a list here. Okay.
See, what was I looking at? Oh, so a lot of these like top 10, you know, I'll just watch like random top 10 videos on YouTube. And the ones that usually do the best involve like women in bikinis at some point. But I'm like, no, WWE's kind of like cleaned up their act. So I don't know if that would work for them. So
Lesnar Returns is a good one. I was going to say the initial NXT invasion.
Oh, I like that. The Nexus. Yeah. Probably something stupid with a celebrity like Logan Paul joins WWE or something.
Logan Paul. Let's say Logan Paul's first match.
Yeah.
I like that one. What else could it be? I don't even know. What about The Rock coming back? The Rock coming back to host WrestleMania. When they introduced him on Raw.
I like that.
Rock's return. And
Shane McMahon returns?
Yeah, how could it not be? It's one of the biggest moments in history.
It's an interesting question. The top 5.
Shane return. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's see. We got a top 5 of Brock Lesnar returning, the Nexus invasion, Logan Paul's first match, Rock returning, and Shane returning. The actual 5 videos that were the top viewed of all time. Number 5, the full match, John Cena and The Rock versus The Miz and R-Truth from the Survivor Series, I don't even know what year
that was.
2012, maybe?
Sounds about that, yeah.
186 million views.
Jeez.
191 million views. Number 4, Stephanie McMahon is furious with Roman Reigns. looks like a segment from Raw 7 years ago where she slapped Roman Reigns.
Okay.
11 years ago, 222 million views. John Cena and Brock Lesnar get into a brawl. That was right after he came back. Remember, they had that big brawl and
So we were off by a couple of weeks, I guess. Then
number two, 5 years ago, 228 million views. Stunning in-ring proposals. WWE Top 10 from November 27th, 2017.
That hurts my brain to think of.
And this one, Andrew, I don't even know what this means, but the number one view on WWE's YouTube channel. Video was posted 9 years ago. Has 312 million views.
Jeez.
The title of the video is just Randy Orton Makes It Personal with Triple H. And it looks like he may have RKO'd Stephanie because it looks like she's laying down in the ring.
Oh. That's the number one of all time, a crappy feud? And
number
Stephanie's
one.
Involved in two of them. That shame on you, WWE Universe.
Time.
Shame on you.
Time.
Ugh.
Time.
Makes me want to puke.
Who can blame you? Well, Andrew, that's it. That's all we have for this week. So I don't know if you've got anything else.
Well, if you got a few minutes, I got something for you.
I absolutely have a few minutes.
I didn't think of this theme until 15 minutes before the show, but I'm pretty proud of myself.
Okay.
In honor of last night's Forbidden Door, tonight's theme is I was I'm only going to get one, and then I'm going to, like, have to cop out and do other random stuff. And then I was like, no, I got two. And then I was like, 6:59 my time, or 7:59 my time. I'm like, I did it. I got all five. Here we go.
Wrestling doors. Okay.
Wrestling doors. Who was the first person to knock on Aleister Black's door? If you remember, he had a gimmick of knock on my door.
Yeah. I don't know, so I'm going to guess, and I'm going to guess Dolph Ziggler.
He's here to show the world. Okay. Question number two about doors. Which NXT wrestler was injured when a prop door didn't open when they were thrown into it?
Whoa, really?
Yeah, this is, I think, within the past year.
Current NXT wrestler was hurt?
I think there's
wait a minute. You know what? I do remember hearing something about this. Yeah. I don't remember who it was, but I do remember hearing something about it. yeah, so... Man. I'm going to have to guess again, Andrew. I'm going to guess Johnny Gargano, just because he's all I can think of.
Johnny Gargano. Number three, Kurt Hennig turned heel in WCW by slamming a cage door into this wrestler's head.
Again, I don't know, so I have to guess. DDP.
Question
so far,
four.
I think I've got over three, so...
Question number four, in 2015, which wrestler hit someone in the crowd with a car door?
Oh, man. Oh, who was this? I do remember. It was Lesnar. Brock Lesnar.
Brock.
He hit the door off of somebody's car and flung it, I believe, and it hit somebody. I think it was Lesnar.
In 2006, Mark Henry.
I'm sorry.
No, that's good.
Such an absurd question, right? Like, who hits someone in the crowd with a car door? Like, only in wrestling could you ask that question.
I totally forgot about it, too. I was like, yeah, if you ask the question, I'm like, how does that even happen? Like, are they driving the car into the crowd and they open the door?
If I remember correctly, he ripped it off its, like, hinges and flung it behind him, and it, like, went into the crowd.
In 2006, Mark Henry infamously struggled to break open a cage door during a cage match on SmackDown. Who were the competitors? he had to resort to breaking the lock, which is actually way more even impressive.
Yeah. Also, I don't remember. But it was 2006, and you said competitors, which makes me think it was a multi-man match.
You know what? I'm going to do a little favor. It is a tag match, 2-on-2.
It was a tag, 2-on-2. Okay, so I think it was, oh, God. 2006, tag match, Cage. Who could it have been? It was, where was Mark Henry in 2006? It was not really main event Mark Henry. I hadn't really flirted with that yet, but it was a cage match, so it had to have been somewhat notable with the names. Let's say it was Mark Henry and MVP against I don't think this is right, but Kurt Angle and Chris Benoit. I don't think that's right.
Five questions.
Okay.
Five answers on doors.
If you tell me I did anything, well, I think I went 1 for 5. I think I got the Lesnar question right. If I got anything more than 1 for 5, I'm going to be stunned.
Well, are you locked in?
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I have to lock in. Yeah. I have to find something to lock in with. Hold on.
Yeah.
Let's find something to lock in with. Lock in with something that's not, oh, that's too long. Jeez, a lot of these audio clips are long. I have to find, I'm going to start searching out some good lock-in sounds.
Bing.
Yeah, something like that. Because some of these lock-in sounds are just, they're really kind of long. All right, I'm going to lock in with this. We'll see what this is. There we go.
I mean, I guess it's probably the one that fit the best so far.
It does, yeah.
I didn't know I was telling a joke there.
I didn't mean to click that. That was my fault.
Tonight's door theme, 5 questions, 5 answers. I hate to say this, you did not win the $5 tonight, but you did get one right.
Was it Lesnar?
Yeah, it was Lesnar.
Okay, or it was like completely wrong and the one that I was completely confident in and got something
that
else
great.
Right. All right.
Who was the first person to knock on Aleister Black's door? I would have got this wrong. I thought it was Big E because Black's last feud, I believe, in the company. You guessed Dolph Ziggler. It was Cesaro.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they fought at Extreme Rules. Which NXT wrestler was injured when a prop door didn't open when they were thrown into it? You guessed Johnny Gargano. It was Gigi Dolin.
I don't even know who that is.
I've heard the name. I don't know who it is. Yeah. Number 3, Kurt Hennig turned heel in WCW by slamming a cage door into this wrestler's head. You guessed DDP. It was the Nature Boy, Ric Flair. A War Games match.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Speaking of War Games, there's reports out there that they're going to do a Blood and Guts match at the Dynamite in Boston, which is in the middle of July. It's like 2 weeks from now.
Oh, dang. Oh, that. Are you going to go?
I don't know. I have to. I may have something to do that night. It all depends on what is going on. So I'm in the middle of coaching a baseball team and don't know whether or not we're going to be playing that night or not. So I have to kind of wait and see. It's a wait and see approach, but potentially.
That would be a fun one. Interesting.
If I have nothing, let me put it this way. If I have nothing going on that night, I will probably go, especially if they're going to do a blood and guts match.
For sure. That'd be fun. Question number 4. Hit a crowd member with a door. That was Lesnar. Just like you said, he threw it in the crowd.
Yeah, whose car was he ripping the door off of, though? That's what I don't remember.
Oh, that's a good question.
Was it a Del Rio thing? Was he still driving the car into the arena, maybe?
Maybe. I don't know why they'd be feuding, though. I don't think they feuded, but it could have been. I don't know. Good question. 2006, Mark Henry infamously struggled to break open a cage door during a steel cage match on SmackDown. Who are the competitors? You guessed Mark Henry and MVP versus Angle and Benoit. None of those are correct. Mark Henry was not in the match. He was trying to break in. The competitors were Batista, Rey Mysterio, and MNM, Mercurian Nitro.
Understood.
But you got one.
I'm impressed that you came up, were able to come up with four door related questions.
This is high up there on my proudest moments on the $5 challenge.
I don't blame you. Like I said, it's impressive. Andrew, where else can people find you?
You can find me on the Unexpected Storytelling Podcast. I've been saying it for months that we've been working on it, and this week we should have a new episode. It might be tomorrow, maybe Wednesday, but what they say, smash that subscribe and all that stuff, the Unexpected Storytelling Podcast.
You can call the show 515-605-9345. You can also email the show alllead@gmail.com. That's it for this week. It was another hard-hitting edition, Andrew, of the All Lead After Show.
Yeah.
We're all very excited to talk to everybody next week, aren't we?
I am excited, and I'm excited to get to the bottom of this mystery.
Yes. The cliffhanger. We're leaving you with a cliffhanger for this week.
Yeah,
but we'll see if we get an answer next week from Jose or Alex or whoever you are. The mystery will be solved next week on the All Elite After Show. Bye.